So, how's the format of this gonna work?
I don't know. I think we just yell at each other for like 45 minutes. What do you think?
I haven't prepared really anything for this. And
I think that's the best. That is hierarchy of disagreement at its core. Just arguing with no preparation.
I prepared for the other ones a little bit. Like, we watched Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
That's true.
And then I kind of rewatched.
I mean, I have seen Phantom Menace, but I didn't watch it for your podcast.
Well, you're missing out. It's a fantastic movie.
And we kind of just stopped there, I think.
Well, we started doing other podcasts.
Just tell me at some point during the recording, one of you two at least stopped and said, "Now that's podcasting."
All right, so we get started. It's all right. Jeez, it's fucking 9 o'clock. Oh my goodness, what a day.
Are you gonna do an intro?
I guess I just like wing it. This is for us. This isn't for the
intro,
fans.
That's where it started.
Yeah. Right there.
Doug asking if we're gonna do an intro.
Okay. Welcome back to the next episode of Hierarchy of Disagreement. Is that what it's called? I don't know.
Yeah, the podcast that's so popular you can't even remember the name. The podcast where we just argue for no reason. All right. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are gathered here today to debate. What is the fundamental debate? It is just whether or not Quentin Tarantino is a good director?
He is not.
Is that the crux of the argument that we are trying to get to I don't know. We just always end up arguing about Quentin Tarantino. Well, I should say you and Jason end up arguing at lunch about Quentin Tarantino, and we just decided to record it just for the heck of it.
Yeah, I feel like I dominated that lunch conversation a bit because reasons, but I am more curious. Nuge, please, by all means, I offer the platform to you. Get us started. Tell me, convince me that Quentin Tarantino is an amazing director.
See, that's the problem. I think it's just a matter of like being flabbergasted with your bad taste. Like there's not much I can do to like fix that. And so like when you say something bad about his movies, I mean, granted they're not all perfect, right? There's definitely flaws. There's some weak movies and stuff, but I mean, you got to at least kind of admire what he's going for in the movies, the style, like the uniqueness of, you know, his.
All right, let's start with this. Regardless of your views on Quentin Tarantino being a good thumbs up or thumbs down director, everyone has a best movie. I'll start with Jason. Jason, what's Quentin Tarantino's best movie?
I'm probably go with Pulp Fiction.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Doug?
Probably Reservoir Dogs. Okay. I will just concede that Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, pretty solid films. Like it was a very inspiring start to his directorial career, much like M. Night Shyamalan. Like he started out pretty good, and it was like exciting. Like, wow, this is different. This is new. And then he really started to believe his own hype.
Okay, so. Oh, God, I hate that I'm kind of agreeing with Doug just a little bit. I really like his stuff as a director. I think he's great. That said, I don't really have any desire to go back and rewatch any of his films other than Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. Like, I'm looking at the list of films that he's made. I mean, you know, Django Unchained was great. I enjoyed it. You know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was fun. Kill Bill was interesting, but it's not like, I don't know, it wasn't my thing that I want to go back and watch again. So, all right, so let's go over this list. So at least according to Rotten Tomatoes, his best movie is Pulp Fiction, followed very closely by Reservoir Dogs. And his worst movie is Grindhouse Presents Death Proof. And the second worst movie, so the top two and the bottom two are Hateful Eight and Death Proof. Which I think is kind of crazy because I actually like Death Proof a lot more than I did Jackie Brown, and it did much worse. Mm-hmm. So,
Wait, you didn't like Jackie Brown very much?
I wanted so much more from it after Pulp Fiction. It had that amazing cast, and it's just the plot was kind of weird. I don't know. It just wasn't my thing. It was okay. It's got an 87 on Rotten Tomatoes, though, so clearly a lot of people liked it. I don't know. Did anybody see Death Proof?
Yeah. Death Proof is awesome. I freaking love Death Proof.
See, maybe I should watch that. I mean,
I watched the Grindhouse double feature in the theater. They did a double feature with Robert Rodriguez's movie. I can't remember what it was. I do remember them doing that. And then they had the fake commercial or fake like movie trailers just interspersed throughout the whole thing. It was so cool. Like, I'll never forget that. And Death Proof was nuts, and it was such a, I think it really worked in that moment, I guess, because the first movie was just crazy. You have like a secret government like conspiracy and aliens and like Bruce Willis, you know, gunning dudes down. There was that girl with like the machine gun for a high heel or a leg. Her leg was an entire gun. And then you're going into those crazy just trailers that are feel like kind of like Rick and Morty interdimensional cable a little bit. And then
It's Rose McGowan, huh? In Planet Terror. I didn't realize
Planet Terror. Okay. Yeah.
Is it just me though?
Like anytime someone mentions Rose McGowan, all I think about is Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, I've heard a couple, I hate to judge somebody, but like I've heard a couple interviews with her, and like she legitimately sounds kind of crazy, like unhinged a little bit. So I don't know. I have a hard time taking anything she says seriously.
I don't know any history there.
I do know, didn't she get wrapped up in the Harvey Weinstein thing, like the whole Me Too movement. I'm pretty sure she slept with Harvey Weinstein and then later regretted it. I just remember her name coming up several times.
Death Proof. I was saying Death Proof. And you guys haven't seen it?
No,
I have not.
It's like a weird, really slow burn. It feels like kind of a 70s, like, B movie, but it has just an insane ending.
That wasn't that kind of the point of that both of those movies? Was it just like a throwback to like the drive-in, you know, slasher flick kind of thing?
Yeah, and I'm not even from that era, but I totally got like the vibe of that, and it just, I mean, it's Chef's Kiss. I really liked it.
Okay, that is kind of the thing with Tarantino, like every film that he does is his take on a type of genre. Like he went so far as to even like name the movie Pulp Fiction, because that was his take on, you know, the Pulp Fiction, you know, paperback dime store novels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Grindhouse, yes, he even said in interviews it was his take on, you know, the B movies that you would see. He talked about like drive-in movies, I think, back in the day. Jackie Brown was that.
Yeah,
back up to that for a sec. Jackie Brown followed Pulp Fiction, and I think a lot of people wanted it to be Pulp Fiction. I know to a degree I wanted it to be Pulp Fiction, but it wasn't, and it was never intended to be. It was his take on the blaxploitation type films,
right?
But. Yeah,
Jackie Brown is oozing with style and like swagger. Like freaking Pam Grier is an amazing actress that I had never seen before. I mean, she's pretty famous from like blaxploitation movies herself, I think.
Yeah, that was where she got her start. It was a huge deal, right?
Yeah, and the dude that plays the detective or the what's his name? He was freaking awesome.
So here I have looking at Quentin Tarantino's repertoire, I do have respect for, you know, what he's done, or at least what he's tried to do. Like you said, he's got his take on, you know, Pulp Fiction is that, you know, that pulpy old school film. He's got the slasher flick. He's got Kill Bill, which is, you know, essentially a what's the word? I want to say a ninja flick.
Samurai kind of movie.
Yeah,
Kill Bill was his mashup of, he even said this too, spaghetti Western and Japanese martial arts.
Yeah, right. So I got to respect him at least branching out. Like, so I don't think you can fault him for being a one trick pony. He's not Kevin Smith, right? I love Kevin Smith. I think he's great, but literally everything he does is a dick or a fart joke. You know,
Who's your favorite band, well, Baker? Tell me who your favorite band is. Nude, you can weigh in on this one too. Favorite band, performer, singer.
They Might Be Giants.
They Might Be Giants. Perfect. Nuge?
Like all time, probably Nine Inch Nails, I'd say.
Okay. Remember that time, like, your favorite artist branched out and did other genres of music? Like, remember that polka hit that Trent Reznor came out with back in the late 90s? No, you don't, because artists don't do that. They perfect their craft. To try and assume that you can do something amazing in every different genre and style is just so fucking egotistical.
Okay, would you say Steven Spielberg doesn't branch out? Do you think
I would say every movie that Steven Spielberg has done has been very Steven Spielberg.
Really? You think so? I mean, there's a huge difference between like E.T. and Jaws.
I mean,
or Schindler's List.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. So here's my argument on that, Doug. Number one, They Might Be Giants branches out and does all kinds of crazy stuff. That's like their shtick. And number two, my favorite author is Stephen King, and he gets pigeonholed as a horror author, but I don't think he's written like a real horror story in forever. He's written science fiction. He's written all kinds of stuff. In fact, that was going to be my segue to the next segment was, he did, you guys remember The Green Mile, right? He got his start, you know, way back in like the 70s when the only way to get published was to write into a magazine, like they had science fiction magazines and stuff. And so The Green Mile was published. I was working at Barnes & Noble at the time. It got published in 6 different pieces, like one a month. So you could only read the first, like whatever it was, 70 pages, and then you had to wait an entire month and then buy the next one. And I don't know, maybe it was a cash grab because he got to sell 6 books instead of one. But it was a really cool experience because, like, there were 6, in essence, I guess 5, you know, cliffhangers. Like, you're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? Like, it was a really cool experience. Dude, Stephen King doesn't need to do that. He could have written his freaking laundry list, published it, and sold 1 million copies and paid his rent. But I appreciate him branching out and trying new stuff. I don't think you can fault somebody.
Stephen King, then?
No, I'm just saying Doug's argument was that just because, you know, Quentin Tarantino doesn't have one style, that he tries to do a bunch of other styles, that makes him, I don't know what that makes him. What was your word, Doug?
I think, okay, and Doug, you also said every Steven Spielberg is you can tell it's a Steven Spielberg movie, and I think maybe there's some truth to that, but that's also true with Quentin Tarantino, even though the genres... He hops from genre to genre. He's trying different styles and different pacing and different things. They all have his very clear stamp on them, I think. Would you disagree with that?
Oh, no, you've changed my mind. I think he's amazing now.
All right, well, job done. Let's wrap it up.
I think that is a good point. Like, I mean, Tarantino does have a shtick, right? It's that hyper-violent... You know, in your face, dropping the N-word, right?
Feet. I mean, feet. Don't forget feet.
I mean, we all know that he's a weirdo and he's into feet, but are they really in that many of his movies? That doesn't stand out as a theme in any of the movies that I remember.
All right. Let's touch on this just for a little bit here. Him as a person, little creepy. Like, a little creepy. Like, let me just put it like this. If The Purge was a real thing, right? I'm not saying I would kill him because I really don't think it deserves to go that far, but I would definitely show up and punch him in the face. Like that, that's probably.
What has he done to you? Like, what did he like?
Show us on this doll where Quentin Tarantino touched you.
Like, I mean,
I'm pointing to my heart.
Like, I mean, if you want to talk about him as a person, I think maybe there was like a story about one. I think I remember there was a story of a girl who felt like uncomfortable with him. But in general, I don't think he's had really any scandals. And like anything weird, like he does a lot of interviews. He seems like a cool dude. Like if like passionate and a little nerdy, like
he's super definitely nerdy. Like eccentric. And yes, like you said, super nerdy. I think
like if you went and hung out with him, like I'm basing this off of just like nothing per se, but if you went and like had a beer, like after about an hour, you'd be checking your phone, be like, hey, Quentin, yeah, it's been fun. I gotta take off. I got this thing I gotta do. And then he would still be like boring you with 1970s movie trivia.
He thinks I would have lunch or dinner or whatever with Tarantino in a heartbeat. I would love to nerd out on movies with him. I saw him on, I want to say it was Conan, but like it was a late night talk show, and they pulled up all these old like VHS cassette covers without the titles on them, and he was just explaining. Oh no, it was the other way. He was asking him about movies, and he could basically recite the cover of the movie because he worked in a movie store when he was, you know, in his 20s or whatever. And he just had all these covers memorized, and he was just nerding out about how cool movies were. And I don't know, maybe at the time, because I mean, I saw Pulp Fiction when I was like 17, and you know, I was really into movies, and so I kind of related to that. I'm like, okay, this is like. This guy's a Hollywood director. He's famous, and he's into movies, so maybe it's cool if I'm into movies. I mean, that's his passion, right? I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. He likes feet. He's got a bunch of money. He can be into feet. That's fine.
You think he was jacking it to any of the box art when he was working at the video store?
If they had feet on them, I'm sure they did. Are feet, is that a theme in any of his movies? I'm trying to remember... There is the scene in Pulp Fiction where Uma Thurman dances with her shoes off, but it's not a close-up on her feet or anything.
No, that comes in Kill Bill.
Is there a scene? I don't remember it. Is there a legit...
Yeah, I mean, it came up before. We talked about it when she was trying to, like, resuscitate herself, and she was like, wiggle your toe, and the camera's just, like, hyper-focused on her feet.
Oh, I do remember that, because she thought she was paralyzed?
Yeah, something like that. She was just coming out of the coma.
Yeah, dude, I've got no problem with that. If I'm, you know, I'm on my sixth film and I got a bunch of money and I'm into, you know, whatever. Dude, heck yeah, I'm going to put that in my movie. I'm going to go home at night and rub one out. I mean, you've earned it. Let's see, that was his seventh movie. He'd earned a little feet action by then. Don't kink shame the man.
You know, and that scene is not sexual either. It's like not.
It's really not.
It's not sexualized. It's.
I mean, not for you.
Well. okay. I mean, yeah. So I don't know. It just doesn't feel like in poor taste to me as far as like a scene, but yeah, you know, he did get to film Uma Thurman's feet for probably multiple hours, you know, and maybe that was a bonus for him. Who knows?
Emphasis on the bone.
Yeah. Speaking of bones,
but hang on. Where's my, I think my little recorder has a rim shot on it. I got to find what it is. Hey, all right, Doug, what's Tarantino's like most indulgent and just like cringy scene from one of his movies? Or can you pick just one?
God, that is a little hard.
Just like Quentin Tarantino after filming that scene of Uma Thurman's feet.
I mean, have you seen all of like his modern movies, Doug?
No, I kind of don't go out of my way to watch his films, believe it or not.
Well, you know, he may have a good one out there that you are maybe missing out on. Have you seen Inglourious Basterds?
Yes, I did watch Inglourious Basterds, mostly for the historical accuracy of it, but you know.
Well, what did you think of the intro scene of that?
It felt like his Schindler's List, to be honest. Like,
are you talking about the scene where the family's under the floor?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only thing I remember about that movie. I mean, I remember Brad Pitt was in it, and then I remember that first scene because it's super duper intense. But the rest of it, to me, was kind of meh.
Why? I disagree. Let's explore those feelings. Why was it meh?
I don't know.
What made it meh for you?
I'm getting older and it's harder to remember things. Like I could recite lines from Pulp Fiction for you. But I don't know. It was just a historical take on, an alternate history on World War II and Hitler. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I do remember it being long and drawn out, and the ending wasn't particularly, I don't know. Just none of it really stood out to me. Right. There's no Uma Thurman getting adrenaline in the heart, right? There's no the cop getting his ear cut off in Reservoir Dogs.
There's the poker scene. There's like the bear Jew, the groups like the Nazi killers Jew group. I mean the scene where they're at the bar and they're playing that game with their fingers or something like that, and there's like a communication error because he holds up the number three with the this, like oh, sorry what were you gonna interrupt
this me? Is embarrassing to me. You guys are the ones who like Tarantino and I'm the only one who remembers this scene correctly. He was ordering three drinks, three.
Oh, okay.
He
signaled
to the bartender three the Western way to do it, the American way to do it, not the German way to do it.
Yeah, instead of with the thumb, he used the first three digits instead of the thumb. That's what I was going to say. I mean, that was a really intense scene. There was a lot of different intense scenes. It didn't feel like there was a major through line through the whole movie. It was a little maybe chaotic, but it was cool.
Was it?
See, a lot of those movies, especially Kill Bill, like, I don't know if I'll ever go back and watch the Kill Bill 1 and 2, but they were so fun. They were just so much fun to watch. And, like, when you left, you're like, damn, that's, like, what movies should be. You know, just, like, super fun, trying to go as crazy as possible, without being, super dumb, I guess. But, like, I don't know, it went for the fences, and it was, a fun time at the theater. Lots of style.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And I had those fun.
A lot of times those movies come out in the summer. They're called popcorn movies, right? Like Independence Day was the first big one that I remember. Like nobody takes that movie seriously. It's Will Smith and some aliens. It's literally designed to put butts in seats and sell popcorn. It's not going to win an Oscar. It's not going to, it's not going to go down in the annals of movie history as a great movie. It's just fun. And sometimes that's okay. And I think that's what a lot of this stuff, I'm looking at his repertoire here. And yeah, a lot of these, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I watched that. And I kind of feel the same way about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I watched it once. I don't think I'll watch it again. Nothing from that movie really super stands out to me. I remember it being kind of slow and, awkward, except for the very end, which is super hyper violent in Quentin Tarantino style. And it was fun. I watched it once and I moved on.
I just heard you describe it as slow and awkward, which I think might be verbatim the same way you just talked about Inglourious Basterds. And I think you might be subconsciously hitting on a theme there.
Well, no, okay. In my defense, yes, you're absolutely right. But the point of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is to be slow and uncomfortable. And, because he puts himself in this situation that he doesn't know how he's going to get out of. And it's long and drawn out. And you're like, oh, shit, is somebody going to jump out of the closet and hit him in the head with a baseball bat? Or does this end well? So it's tense, I should say, is probably a better word.
Well, it's very immersive. I would say that's one thing that he's good at is sort of like really experimenting with pacing and like he's okay with being boring in a movie for a bit because that does immerse you. Like if you're in a scene that doesn't do anything for an uncomfortable amount of time, you're suddenly way more focused on what's happening. You're looking at every piece of the scenery. You're looking at all of the actors' motions and what they're looking at, and you're just looking for what is going to happen.
Just
focused on it more, I think.
I mean, what you described right there, is that not the very first scene in Inglourious Basterds, like to a T? Just super boring. They're talking about milk.
No, I wouldn't say boring. No, that one is super tense because you know there's some tension there. It's an obvious tension, you know.
And yeah, but there's no action.
You're really focused. Yeah, the action isn't really there. But like, there's a scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood of the actress just like going to the store, and it's sort of a really weird, like, out of place scene, and it doesn't really do anything. But you can't help but feel like what is going on here? Why is he showing this right now? And so you zero in, you laser in on the movie a little bit more because it's different. It's not a normal pacing where you have, you know, first act, set up the conflict, major, you know, problem happens and second act and so forth. It's like, it's different. And you have to at least appreciate him trying to be different AAA movies, you know, cause they're really big budget movies. It's not just an art house, like experimental college film. It's big budget, a lot of money on the line for these kinds of movies. And he experiments and he takes chances. Those are big chances you have to take when you All have right. Brad Pitt in your movie, you know.
I will acknowledge that art is, of course, subjective, and people's interpretations of it can vary. I will absolutely acknowledge that. That said, let's not make the mistake of suggesting that being experimental is good purely because it's experimental. You can take a chance and miss, and he absolutely has. At times, he swings for the fences and completely whiffs. To me, that was Inglourious Basterds. I will concede, yes, he took a chance with that. He definitely put something out there. Was it good? God, no. It was terrible. Being experimental and just trying new stuff and just doing something different does not in and of itself make anything that he does good. You have to actually be good with the experiment. It has to succeed. It has to work. His stuff doesn't always work, and you have to realize that, right?
Oh, sure.
Well, so, I mean, okay, so, like, doesn't always work. I guess I would disagree that, like, maybe it's not all, like, instant classic Pulp Fiction, you're gonna remember it for your entire life, but almost everything is fun. Like, you know, everything is fun for me to see something different, like that I'm not used to seeing in a feature film, and almost all the time I'm having fun in his movies. Like I can't think of one where I was just super bored and I really just wanted to leave the movie and I didn't get it. Like, I, you know, a lot of times I get what he's going for and I just super appreciate what he's trying to do usually. And a lot of times it's bombastic. It's like bold and just fun. Maybe not like something to be remembered for your entire life, but I mean, it may not work for you, but
I'm just curious. Does he shave? Or does he have hair on his balls? When you're licking him, did you notice if he shaved or had hair on his balls?
I mean, well, you can like, you know, yeah.
You just down there like
we're debating whether or not, you know, he's a good director, and I'm giving you reasons why.
Reason earlier you were like, oh, I'd love to hang out with Quentin Tarantino. Like now you're, yeah, okay.
Well, I didn't say that, but that was Baker. But
that was Baker actually.
If I had to lick his balls and go out to dinner with him, I'd do it.
Would you make him shave first? I kind of get the feeling he doesn't, right? Like he seems like a type of dude who probably doesn't.
It's going to go one of two ways. Yeah, either he's just completely hairy down there because he doesn't care, or he's had electrolysis for 20 years because...
No. He loves the 70s and films from the 70s.
Oh, that's true.
You know what type of films came from the 70s.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right. What? Okay. Let's move on a little bit here. What about Quentin Tarantino's acting career?
Are we done talking about Tarantino's balls?
Yeah, I think we've exhausted your balls, that subject. Doug?
What's that?
Do you shave your balls?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna put that out on a podcast.
Okay, here's the part where we have a side interview with Amy where all she does is talk about Doug shaving his balls. And we've got a firsthand account. Okay, so I'm looking at
that went places.
Yeah, it did. I'm looking at his what is this? This is on Metacritic, and let's go through some of the movies that he's acted in. Let's see. He acted in True Romance.
Never saw it.
You didn't see True Romance? Oh, it's really good, actually.
I don't think so.
Oh,
I love that movie. Yeah,
it's worth watching.
What's other that? Than Tarantino? Who was in it?
Oh, Christian Slater
and what's the chick's name? Patricia Arquette.
Patricia Arquette. Okay.
It's yeah, and Commissioner Gordon. Crap, what's his name?
Christopher Walken.
Gary Oldman. In it.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman. Like in everything.
You should watch True Romance. He wrote part of that too. Let's see. He also was in. He had a small acting part in Desperado, I believe. He had a small acting part in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Small?
Yeah, he wasn't a
He was second lead in that, right?
He wasn't the lead, but he had a decent amount of screen time.
Yeah.
He was kind of the second lead, I thought. Like George Clooney's brother.
He was super creepy in that, as you know, like when he's like hitting on what's her name?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he kind of puts himself in these kind of movies. And
I guess he was in Pulp Fiction. I love that scene in Pulp Fiction when they go to his house, you know, and they're trying to dispose of the body. And he was like, does my garage have a sign on it that says whatever?
Yeah, no. What's the rest of that line? Because it's I so forget. Comfortable to talk about.
I really, you know, it was a great line, but it seems to have escaped me. The point is, like, I think he's got, you know, at least some acting chops. Oh, he was in, what's the movie about the Four Rooms? He was in about the butler with Tim Roth as the butler. And he's got a great scene in that, right?
What is the most recent thing that he's done?
I think it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, isn't it?
Was he in that?
Was he in it? I don't think he was in it. I think he just directed it.
He does have an acting credit for Once Upon a Time. I don't remember what he did in that, but I don't know.
Okay, how about this, Doug? Is Quentin Tarantino a better actor than he is a director?
No.
Wow.
I mean,
are you going to pick on his acting? Do you remember any of his acting scenes in these movies? And two, do you not like him as an actor?
I'm not sure he's acting a lot in the scenes that he's in. He kind of reads lines a little bit.
You mean he's that good that he just blends in?
What has he ever done that's like really demonstrated a proficient range of emotional like portrayal?
I think that scene in Pulp Fiction.
He goes from
angry to, oh, okay, the wolf is coming. Like, oh, okay, why did she say that at the beginning? Like, there's some. Yeah.
He goes from angry to mildly annoyed. That's a pretty big stretch right there. Wow. Fucking Tarantino is amazing.
Oh, my God. Somebody get this guy an Oscar.
So I think it's emblematic of his style of acting, or it's just emblematic of your opinion, I think, of him in that movie. Or like in Reservoir Dogs or whatever, like especially in Pulp Fiction, it's kind of just a fun scene. It's really, you know, is he trying to be like, you know, show range, and is he trying to be like a thespian, and And
no, I'm not saying he's trying to be. I'm not saying the roles need to be. I'm just saying let's not pretend he's a fucking phenomenal actor when he hasn't done anything.
Yeah, no, and you could pick on him because he's not a good actor. I would agree he's not a good actor, but I think it's like a fun scene, and that's kind of emblematic of what I'm trying to communicate. Where, like, if you objectively look at that scene, I don't think the acting's great, but it's a freaking fun scene. Like, it just is different. It's really, the dialogue is just so extensive and interesting and like bold, and that's very emblematic of what I think I appreciate of his movies. They're just, you know, and if it doesn't hit you, man, that's fine.
You know what? You know what? Hang on. I got some. Doug, you know, there is one thing that you absolutely do agree with Quentin Tarantino on, and that's his policy on tipping.
Are we going back to Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. He was the one that kind of talked about that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doug is very outspoken on tipping, so.
Yeah, I don't think I'm like that hardcore. I'm not going to say that he's wrong, but like, I think there's more gray area than that. I definitely think the pendulum has swung too far, but.
Okay. I remember watching like Reservoir Dogs when I was like 18, and that scene totally resonated with me. Like, this is bullshit. I'm never tipping again, right? Because you know you're just a 20-year-old full of.
All right, this outrage. Podcast is now about tipping.
This is the tipping pod. We should have a whole nother podcast just about another episode that's just about us ranting like, about tipping.
During the pandemic, we were doing a lot of like ordering online, a lot of food. DoorDash and more businesses were like accepting tips, and during the pandemic it felt like really good to do that, to give more to service workers, but that has kind of lingered and you know,
yeah,
you know, the pandemic's over. I mean, you know, as much as it probably ever will be, and all of that has remained, all the structure infrastructure has been built around that expectation now, and so there's more. So it's,
I think if there's one thing Quentin Tarantino has taught us all, it's that tipping is overrated.
I don't disagree with that. I don't feel like we should actually do an episode on tipping because I think that would just be like 30 minutes of us vehemently agreeing with each other.
Yeah, it's true. Doug, if you had to watch a Quentin Tarantino movie again, what are you going to watch? Like, terrorist gun to your head, Doug, you have to watch a Tarantino movie. What do you pick?
I know this might sound a little crazy, but I think I'd want to watch one of the newer ones, one of the ones that I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, okay.
Because I damn sure don't want to have to watch any of the ones that I've already seen.
You wouldn't sit down and watch Pulp Fiction again?
I mean, would it be the worst thing in the world? No, there's far worse things out there that I would have to endure than that. But do I want to? Not really. No.
What do we know? I mean, it was just in the news the other day. He's going to do his 10th movie and then retire. And it's some movie about it's called The Movie Critic, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You tell me, though, both of you, I want to hear your suggestions. What Tarantino movie should I watch that I haven't seen yet that you think might change my opinion? Like, that maybe isn't just, like, a two-hour, like, festival of how amazing Tarantino thinks he is.
Have you seen Hateful Eight?
I have not, no.
Yeah, I kind of want to watch that again now, actually.
It wasn't that, like, the second lowest rated one?
Yeah, it was. I was surprised to see. Well, okay, when I say second lowest rated, it has a 74%. So all of Tarantino's movies on this list, at least on Rotten Tomatoes, are, okay, other than Grindhouse, which wasn't very rated very well. The Hateful Eight is rated the lowest, and it's 74. So, I mean, even that is a solid C. And that seems unfair to me. So that's that. I think that might be my vote too, is Hateful Eight, just because that I thought that was a really cool movie. That the point of that movie is that they're all, it's all these terrible people, and they're all stuck inside this one building because of this snowstorm. You know, so I guess it's sort of like what we talked about earlier, where it builds up tension because it's just, you know, something is coming, and it's this slow burn, and it's, you know, and you know it's a Tarantino movie, so it's going to end in crazy bloodshed, right? You know, so.
Yeah, and it's he actually got Ennio Morricone to do the score, which is kind of insane. The who's score is amazing. Doug probably knows who that is.
I don't know who that is.
He did all those like classic Western scores, like Fistful of Dollars, and like Good, Bad, and the Ugly. He's amazing, and he kind of took him out of retirement to do this movie, and it's different in that respect. I don't think there's a lot of needle drops, whereas like I think that might be one thing that bugs Doug about his movies. It could be that there's, like, he's heavy on the needle drops with his movies. They're very,
what's a easy needle drop?
Music, like an actual song that's not a score, music. So it's like, you know, playing Son of a Preacher Man in Pulp Fiction, or, well, that, no, that's diegetic. That's actually diegetic, meaning like it's actually in the scene, those characters playing the music, but it's basically a song that's played in the movie that's not like specifically scored for the movie, you know? It's like a popular song or something.
Well, say what you will about that. I mean, both the Pulp Fiction and the Reservoir Dogs soundtracks are total bangers, dude. I love those soundtracks.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if that's like a part that's like might be where Doug departs. He doesn't like the needle drops. What do you say? What say you, Doug?
I mean, some of the music that he features in his films, I appreciate and I enjoy. Some of the music I loathe and detest. Do I feel like sometimes it adds to the scene? Sure. Do I feel like sometimes it completely takes over the scene? Yes. So I guess a little bit mixed, but in the spirit of just hating Tarantino, I'm going to say, yeah, it sucks.
Roland legitimately, like, 3 days ago had a middle school band concert, and they played Jungle Boogie, and Roland was practicing it, and I dusted off my Pulp Fiction soundtrack, and I'm like, Roland, is this the song you're playing? And then I played Jungle Boogie for him. So yeah, it was like totally, that's my exposure to that song. I don't think I'd ever heard it before Pulp Fiction, but it's burned into my memory now. So here's all these eighth graders playing Jungle Boogie, and I'm like, you know, watching Uma Thurman and John Travolta dance in my head. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just.
Yeah. So he's like really bold with the music in his
movie. Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, yeah, maybe that's something that like it pulls you out of it a little bit, because you're such a music snob, I'll say, just straight up.
It took you a while to come out with that, but okay.
You know, I was trying to be nice, but that's the most accurate term.
Whatever happened, he's kind of a Star Trek fan, right? There was rumors going around Hollywood that he was going to do an R-rated Star Trek movie for a while, but I guess it never went anywhere.
Right, yeah, there was rumors of, you know, some talk of a Star Trek, I guess, but
he was, you know, maybe going to talk to J.J. Abrams and take it dark. It was
probably just some random interview where someone asked him, like, would you do, you know, what would you do, like, what IP or something? I think, like, what IP would you want to work with if it wasn't an original? He probably mentioned Star Trek or something.
Okay.
That would make sense.
That sounds terrible.
It kind of, actually, I gotta say, I agree. It doesn't sound great. I don't know if Star Trek and Tarantino really need to join forces.
Have a baby, yeah.
Actually, yeah. But
Doug, if you had to choose a genre that Quentin Tarantino hasn't explored yet, what genre would you want him to explore?
Retirement.
Wow. Okay. All right. So you're so what I'm hearing then is you're really looking forward to Quentin Tarantino's 10th and last movie that's coming out soon.
I mean, I have no problem with his movie coming out. Sure. Yeah, fine. Make a movie. He has fans, people that appreciate his work. I know I'm in the minority. I hold no delusion about that. So yeah, whatever. Produce the movie. People will see it. They will enjoy it. Yay. I'm looking forward to not having to hear his fans talk about how great he is and how visionary he is and how, you know, experimental all his works are and how he's just amazing because he really pushes the envelope. And he doesn't do that for me. His works are pretentious, over the top, annoying. It's long-winded, boring, self-indulgent. I could keep going, but...
I don't know. While I'm here, that sounds like a date. You, me, and Jason in the theater for the midnight showing.
Actually, I was going to propose this. I don't know when that is supposed to come out, but... You guys both said Hateful Eight would be a good candidate of one for me to see that might change my opinion. Right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Where can I watch it? I propose we all watch Hateful Eight, and then we come back and do another episode, record, and offer our opinion on it.
I'm down for that. Yeah, I'm open for any excuse to watch that movie again, because I kind of forgot about it until we started talking about it.
All right, what's it on? Is it a Netflix one? Or
I will look it up, and I will let you know. I can acquire it if need be.
Completely legally, I got it.
Yeah, from the DVD in my basement.
Blu-ray.
Yes. All right, let's do it. Jason, you watch it again?
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, I haven't watched it again since I saw it in the theater. It's a long movie.
Is it?
Yeah, it's pretty long. And they had like a special showing where I think they had like an intermission in the theater. There was like no previews. It was really cool.
Oh, shit. Doug's in for it. Yeah, it's 168 minutes long. And there's actually apparently a director's cut that's 187 minutes long.
All right, director's cut it is.
I don't remember it being. I'll see what I can come up with.
Did you say 160? What in the?
168 minutes.
Wow.
You've already committed, Doug.
Almost 3 hours.
Almost.
What the hell is going to happen?
If I remember right, it's kind of like two different movies. You know, like there's a is there an intermission in it, Nugent?
There is, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to because like
well,
the first half.
Yeah, I don't know if the DVD has it like built into the movie itself, but there was when I saw it in the theater.
I remember when I saw it, there was an intermission in it.
Yeah.
That is because there's an intermission in oh crap, what's that hotel movie? That I don't remember what the director's name is. I'm drawing a blank.
You're thinking of Wes Anderson movie?
Yes, yes. What's that movie called?
Oh yeah,
the Hotel Bohemia or whatever. Anyway, there's an intermission in that in the middle, and I kind of was like, wait, what? Hmm. Anyway, yeah, the Hateful. It's like two different parts essentially. Like the first half is all these people getting to this snowed-in cabin, and the second half is then all of them being in this cabin and hating each other and being terrible.
Amazing.
People. Yeah, so, you're gonna love it.
It's looking a one-location so movie. Much. I mean, that is kind of cool. It's like a bottle episode for a movie.
Well, maybe we could do that. Could we watch like the first half and then talk about it and then watch the second half?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we could. We could do anything.
I don't know, man.
That sounds like too many steps. I think I'm just in one shot, get it done and over with.
You like just rip the Band-Aid off?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I don't have time for that. Mm-hmm.
Dude, the cast is amazing in that. Samuel L. Jackson, Kurt Russell, Walton Goggins, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen, Bruce Dern. Dude, it's awesome. I mean, it's a great movie.
Channing Tatum's in it. I forgot.
Does not appear to be on Netflix.
Well, we'll figure it
we'll
out.
Find it. We'll find it. I know a guy. All right, so that's the plan. We will all three of us watch Hateful Eight, which is Quentin Tarantino's second lowest rated movie, and then we'll report back.
So I do, before we quit, I just want to mention I did like the tiniest amount of research on his new movie. I was curious about his new movie that's coming out. It's like about a movie critic, but it's about, supposedly it's about a movie critic that he really loved. It's 70s Los Angeles female Pauline Kael, who was a legendary film critic, and her favorite actor was John Travolta. I actually just watched an interview with John Travolta because I bought the like, it's like an anniversary Blu-ray of Pulp Fiction, and it has a lot of cool interviews on it, but an interview with John Travolta and how he obtained that part was really kind of crazy. There was a lot of like big name actors that wanted to get in it. Like Daniel Day-Lewis was someone that wanted that part. But Tarantino kind of fought for John Travolta. And one of the reasons was because his favorite critic, Pauline Kael, her favorite actor was John Travolta. And so like, that's kind of how that came together, which is kind of funny.
I appreciate the background information there and the anecdote, and but my apologies. After you said John Travolta, all I heard was Scientology, 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 Scientologist Tom Cruise, Scientology.
Just like the adults' voices and
peanuts.
Wah, 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 wah.
Is Travolta a bad actor? No, but a lot like Tom Cruise, it's just so associated now that
Yes, but he was a great choice for that movie. Like, you have to admit, right? I mean, he was like oozing with swagger in that movie. It's like stuff. Like,
I had no idea. I mean, that movie came out in what, 97? I had no idea who Travolta was. I mean, I was, 18 at the time. But that, I mean, that really put him on the map. He was in our parents' genre, right? I mean, he was in all those movies that came out. He was popular for a lot of things. But I would say, I mean, you could argue that, I mean, that movie definitely brought Travolta back, right? That movie definitely put Samuel Jackson on the map, right? Neither one of those were big Hollywood actors, you know, so.
I think his acting choices are so amazing. That's like another thing that he does really well. Like Lawrence Fishburne was up for Samuel L. Jackson's part as well, and he was a much more known actor, but he knew that like Samuel L. Jackson was just much better, like being like an angry dude that was able to deliver that biblical line. Like,
so Tarantino gets credit for Samuel Jackson's performance.
He gets credit for casting him. Come on.
Yeah.
Does he though? I mean, you know what? No. No.
Okay.
Tell us, Doug. Tell us.
You can't attribute the greatness of others onto Tarantino. Does he have like impressive casts in his films? Yes, he does. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to try and argue that the actors in his films are not incredible at what they do. But that still doesn't make him a good director.
But it's not that they're great actors. It's that they were unusual choices at the time. Many times he's cast actors that are kind of unusual, unpopular. Are the right choice, but not based on like how much pull they're going to get at the box office. Pam Grier is the lead in his follow-up movie to his like most popular movie ever. Like Pam Grier is the lead in his follow-up movie. Like that is insane. And then, so, you know, you can't just brush it off by saying like, oh, these are good actors, so obviously they're going to be good performances. No, there's a talent in bringing together the right people and performing things in the right, like in a specific way that he has crafted, like he has put it together. Like, I hate to sound like pretend. You say like people are all like, oh, he's so experimental. I don't see it as pretentious. I think he's trying to just have fun, and he's trying to like show tribute to like stuff he loved as a kid. I don't see it as pretentious. Like she's trying to be avant-garde, push the envelope. He really isn't trying to push the envelope. He's really just trying to evoke stuff he loves. I don't see it as pretentious at all. Like, I think that's kind of the main sticking point that you have, is you see it like everyone that praises him as being like, oh, he's so experimental, and, you know, oh, he's like pushing the boundaries of cinema. I don't see it that way. I think he's just a nerd that seems to be having as much fun as he can have making movies, you know?
We're going long. I want to give Doug.
I want to give Doug the
closing remarks in response to Jason's. Doug, you get the last word.
I mean, okay. Like, dude, you see it that way. Good. I'm happy for you. You do realize that you're the type of Quentin Tarantino fan that I'm looking forward to not having to hear from after he retires, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're going to have to hear from me for the rest of your life, Doug.
All right. Well, we'll come back in after we watch Hateful Eight, and hopefully Doug will have changed his mind.
I'm sure. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Tarantino out.
What nice.
This is a one trick pony with this podcast group.
That's all I got.
This robot out. Okay.